the week of July 12th, 2020, this is Showbiz Sandbox, episode 502, the podcast that brings you all the dirt on the news making headlines around the entertainment world. In Los Angeles, I'm Jay Sperling Reich.
And in Riverdale, I'm Michael Giltz.
Why are you in Riverdale, and isn't that a comic book?
It's a world, a whole universe, I would say. It's the Archieverse. Perhaps that's the way to say it. Archie Comics is coming to Spotify. Yes, yet another property is going to be podcastable. They're going to turn Archie comic books and other properties in the Archieverse into podcasts, meaning just like Marvel, they're going to create original. This is like the return of radio dramas. You know, it's amazing how things always come around again, where they're creating fully cast radio plays. And they're building them around Marvel, and now they're building them around the Archie comics. You have Archie and Jughead. Maybe they'll give new life to the Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. That show has got one final go-around coming up ahead. But if Buffy can live on as a comic book, there's no reason Archie comics, which has been a TV show in multiple iterations, could not continue to live on as a podcast. So they are coming to Spotify. That's all we know. Just one more sign of how podcasts are, you know, becoming the red hot center of stuff, especially right now, because that's the easiest thing to do, and how everything comes back around again. Drive-in movie theaters and radio dramas are the hottest thing in town.
Well, I'm sorry, I wasn't really paying attention because I was too busy filling out my trademark application for Archieverse.
That's yes, they might have that already, I'm afraid, but that's pretty good. But while you're doing that, tell us, what are we going to talk about this week?
This week on Showbiz Sandbox, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Well, here's the thing. We are facing a shutdown in news.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Not much has happened. But don't worry. I'm sure somehow we'll stretch this out to an hour. You know, there's got to be a way to do that. Maybe I'll tell some jokes. You know,
I could sing. La, 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 la.
Okay. You know what? Never mind. We'll keep this as short as possible then. We've got some box office news, you know, sort of. Maybe a little. And the video on demand chart will run down updates on social justice and the pandemic as they affect the entertainment industry and wind up with some obituaries at the end of the show. But no big deal or big whoop and no inside baseball because everyone was apparently too busy arguing over when and how to send kids back to school to do any deals at all, frankly.
And as far as you're concerned, just send them back. I don't care. Just send them back.
Don't get me started. Yes. And the funny thing is, my kids go to school in the Las Virgenes Unified School District. They announced what they were doing for the fall. And literally, I think every parent said, so you listened to what we had to say and you decided that you were going to take nobody's ideas into kids. Like, it was like, oh, yeah, no, that doesn't work for anyone. It doesn't work for anyone. It probably doesn't even work for the teachers. But anyway, but you know, the one thing that will remain the same during this episode of Showbiz Sandbox is that first, as always, we will be turning it over to entertainment journalist extraordinaire Michael Giltz, that's you, by the way, to fill us in on last week's video on demand charts.
Well, we have both a little box office news preliminary and video on demand charts. I'll do the VOD charts first. We're looking at North American charts. These are standard video on demand stuff. So it's things that you can rent for $3 or $4 or $5. It's not premium video on demand. It's not stuff you can stream on Netflix. It's stuff you pay for to rent over the weekend. This covers the last 7 days of the last few days of June into early July. So it's like 2 weeks behind. They're a little bit slower to get the info out. I don't know why. Maybe it's because all these different cable companies and people have to report in info and then collate it all. I don't know. They just weren't as busy or as focused on it as other areas of the business. You know, box office, you get right away. VOD, like, nobody cares. Well, we care now. And the number one movie in video on demand in North America is Force of Nature, that hurricane heist flick starring Mel Gibson and Emile Hirsch. At number two is The Outpost, another new flick. This is the Rod Lurie drama set in, is it Iraq or Afghanistan? I think it's Afghanistan.
It's Afghanistan.
And it stars Orlando Bloom and Milo Gibson. So certainly for the first time on video on demand charts that I know of, perhaps if it was a box office chart, it'd be one of the first times in history. We have two movies at number one and number two, one of them starring the father, the other of them starring the son, because Milo Gibson is the son of Mel Gibson. So the Gibson family has number one and number two on the chart. That's kind of cool. At number three is The Invisible Man. At number four is Bad Boys for Life. And at number 5 is The Hunt. You can see the rest of our chart is basically the same. At number 6 is Sonic the Hedgehog, then Jumanji, The Next Level, 1917, the best film on the list, Avengers Endgame, the highest grossing film on the list, and Burden, that film starring Forrest Whitaker about the KKK and racial tension. So that is our top 10 chart on video on demand. We don't know how much any of them have made, but we can get a sense, like if you don't break it into number 1 or number 2 on your first week, you're probably not making as much money as you would like, unless there's some other movie really dominating and raking in the bucks. From what we can imagine, it doesn't seem as busy or hectic, or I don't know. I don't feel like they're drawing in the coin, or they'd be talking more about it. You know, how much is The Invisible Man made? That's done quite visibly well, but I'd love to hear from them if they.
It would be great to know just out of sheer curiosity, because, I mean, let's just take The Invisible Man, for instance. Okay, so that movie cost roughly $65 million to make, probably another $65
really?
Million. Dollars. Roughly, yeah. Okay. I mean, didn't it?
I don't know. Keep going.
But, you know, let's just say the whole thing all in cost about $100 million to make and market. I'd love to know.
Budget for The Invisible Man, at least reported according to Box Office Mojo. I don't know where I got their info. This is a low budget film. It is from distributed by Universal, but it's a small flick from Blumhouse. Its budget
$7 million. $7 million. It made how much theatrically?
Well, theatrically, worldwide, it made $130 million. It had a pretty solid theatrical release.
I would love to know how much this movie is making on VOD during this time period, which, by the way, is probably not indicative of a normal time period.
Oh, no.
But just, you know, out of sheer curiosity, what is possible when it comes to VOD?
Right. And of course, these are strange times, so we wouldn't draw any long-term conclusions about premium video on demand when people are trapped at home and desperate for new stuff to do. But hey, if you've got something to boast about, boast away. Let us know. You can be anonymous. We'll tell everybody. We won't say you told us.
That's true. You can write to us, dirt@showbizsandbox.com. That's dirt@showbizsandbox.com. You can also call and leave us a voicemail. The number to call is 888-567-SAND. That's 888-567-7263. We're on Twitter, where our handle is @showbizsandbox. And we are also on Facebook, facebook.com/showbizsandbox.
And then we do have a little box office. We'll have firmer figures later in the day, probably maxing out like the number one movie grossing $500,000, stuff like that. But still, there are some drive-ins and there are some movie theaters open and people are going to the movies. I'd love to go to a drive-in. The closest one is an hour away. I think I'm going to do it. This week right now, it's showing Goonies and Gremlins on one of the screens. I forget the other screen. But, you know, if something good opens up in a week or two, maybe I'll go check it out. Because certainly, if they were playing The Empire Strikes Back, that would have lured me. You know, I'd say, hey, okay, I'll go check it out, because our number one film back from 1980, and then once again when it was re-released, it's The Empire Strikes Back, or Star Wars Episode 5, I believe, right? Yeah. So that's kind of fun. Also on the charts are Pixar's Inside Out, Black Panther, and a new film, the horror flick Relic. So a lot of the box office dominated, of course, by old favorites. They only pay, like, apparently, $250 to get a copy of these films and then show them at their drive-in. And they get to keep all the money. So it's a flat rate. Let me just take your old movie. That's what I'm reading in some of the trade stuff. That's kind of cool.
Well, that's partly because the studios are, rather than renting it, they're kind of just doing a flat rate rental. But
30, 40 year old movie. And people are like, you want to watch it? Great.
Yeah. And it's a way to help out the drive-ins and help out theaters.
Yeah, well, and, you know, revivifies their movies, makes some more toy sales. Always happy to bring in a few bucks and get a little attention. Some people get attention for bad reasons, and that brings us to our social justice update. There's some good news right off the bat, isn't there?
Well, I don't know which good news you're talking about, whether it's Shep Smith joining CNBC, or maybe it's the Washington Redskins, who will no longer be called the Washington Redskins.
Right, they don't have a new name yet, but after decades of people saying, yeah, that's actually really offensive. They finally realized, okay, maybe it's time to go. So it's kind of annoying for them because they don't get tons of credit for doing this. It's like, yeah, it took you long enough. That's sort of the attitude. But Shep Smith, openly gay anchor at Fox News, who is joining CNBC's lineup. He'll be doing a news program in the evening on CNBC. So he'll be one of the figurehead of that place and their hard news delivery. We'll have to see how he does. Similarly, Joy Reid, a black woman. That doesn't happen a lot in primetime news channels. She's joining the lineup at MSNBC with a new show replacing Chris Matthews and Hardball. Just like if you replace, you know, a Robert E. Lee statue with Frederick Douglass, you know, it's a double win when you replace Chris Matthews and Hardball with Joy Reid at MSNBC. So that's a win-win situation.
Well, and what is this? I see you have some news here about CBS, Les Moonves.
Oh, this is more negative stuff. CBS has fired the showrunner, Peter Lenkov. We've been hearing about him for a while. They had an internal investigation. It confirms a long-running pattern of dismissive and prejudiced attitude towards women, people of color, gays, and, as some people say, to be fair, he's also really obnoxious to white men if they're below him. So he pretty much is horrible to everyone. An equal opportunity jerk, as some people describe him. He worked on Magnum P.I., MacGyver, and Hawaii Five-O, which rather famously lost two key stars, frankly, because of him and how they were treated on the show. They always felt treated poorly, and Peter Lenkov would be a key reason of that. This is the latest problem for CBS. They had Les Moonves, CBS 60 Minutes head Jeff Fager, Charlie Rose, and a number of other showrunners and execs. They've had a really poisonous atmosphere at that network. You know, it comes from the top down, but when people
you mentioned Les Moonves here.
Yeah. Okay. When people are making money for you on Magnum PI, that's still ongoing. No, MacGyver's ongoing, and Hawaii Five-O ended just a short time ago. I feel like you're seeing Peter Lenkov get pushed out now that he's less important to you financially. That's one sad fact I have to draw from.
Here's my question. I haven't seen any of the new Magnum PI at all. Does he still drive around in a Ferrari?
You're asking the wrong fella. I don't even know if he's a man. Is Magnum P.I. a woman? You know, I don't know anything about it.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I remember seeing it going, oh, that could work. That could work. And then I'm going to check that out. And then I never checked it out.
Well, Justin Lin of Fast and Furious directed the pilot. It stars Jay Hernandez. That's a little spin on it. He's a former Navy SEAL, but it's still in Hawaii. And I'm going to place money that he's got a really cool car. I don't know what he's got, but I'm sure it isn't, you know, a Prius. I mean, it could be a Tesla. It could be eco-friendly, but it ain't a Prius. And here's some good news. At Fox News, they've given a promotion to a key writer for Tucker Carlson.
I love it when you hear about, you know, a promotion for somebody. That's really nice.
Carlson specifically credited him for helping his show after the guy was revealed to have made toxically disparaging remarks about people of color, women, gay. I'm sorry. He was fired, not promoted.
So was he ever promoted?
No, apparently he was fired. Neff was fired at Fox News. The joke is, of course, why was he fired? They're like, we are shocked at the things he said in these private forums with an anonymous name for years. We're shocked at his obnoxious anti-women, anti-gay, anti-black. Why? He says them on the air all the time. You know, I mean, what do you think Tucker is doing? Why do you think he has no advertisers except MyPillow and other Fox shows?
So MyPillow.
I'm not quite sure why Neff was fired in this case. I'm not quite sure why they felt, well, this goes too far and we're going to have to just cut him loose. But that's what they did. So that tells you how much people are paying attention, how much maybe there's new people at Fox News who aren't happy with Tucker being the new face of the network, would like to have a more advertiser-friendly face. Maybe they're looking to get ready to pivot after the election, though. If there are Democrats in office, being the loyal opposition is sort of their bread and butter. That's when they can really make hay while the sun shines. You know, so I don't know, but they decided it wasn't worth it and they dumped him.
By the way, for anybody who is outside the United States and they want to know what MyPillow is, Google it. And, you know, maybe go to YouTube, look at some of those advertisements. And I'm not asking you to watch an advertisement. I'm watching you it's entertaining. When you actually see, like, wow, really? This guy? Okay.
Sold a lot of pillows.
I've never
tried one. Are they not good? Are the ads goofy?
The ads are just goofy, And they're constantly on Fox News.
They are indeed. Well, let's switch from social justice to the coronavirus update. AMC, Regal, and Cinemark are suing New Jersey. They're saying, why are you treating us differently from churches? If churches can open up, we should be able to open up too. And I think that's fair. It's like, well, if people can sit in a room for an hour and go to mass or 2 hours or 3 hours, why shouldn't they be able to socially distance and be in a room to watch a movie? There's no reason to treat them differently necessarily. They're not doing this because they're angry that churches are open. They're doing it really just to clarify and say, well, what's the deal here? You know, we all need to follow certain patterns. You shouldn't punish a business because they sell alcohol, you should and you don't like alcohol, you should punish them because they're not following the rules or they're not capable of socially distancing. So they just want clear and consistent rules for everybody.
This was a big thing in the state of California when NATO of California, the National Association of Theater Owners of California, which begs the question, how are you NATO? The N is for national. But then anyway, it's NATO of California. It's kind of a chapter of NATO here in California. They basically turned to Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, and said, hey, you know, you're reopening everything and you put movie theaters in like phase four, but somehow churches are supposed to be open. Let's review what churches are. It's basically a whole bunch of rows of seats with people sitting facing in one direction, listening to one person at the front of the room. So basically all those people are sitting in rows looking at the front of the room. You know where else they do that? In movie theaters. So we're going to sue you. And Gavin Newsom realized, okay, I'm going to lose this. So he just said, okay, movie theaters can open.
Yeah. So yeah, just be consistent. It doesn't make any sense given the ability for them to follow the same guidelines as a church to treat them differently, whatever it is. If it's a nightclub, if it's a, you know, if they can follow the rules and do what other people are doing, you know, they got enough ventilation and air circulation, you know, you have to have a good reason other than, well, we feel bad about churches or churches are pressuring us to do this. If it's safe for a church to open, then open a movie. And if it's not safe for a church to open, then you don't open them anyone else either.
Yeah, but I think it's also very political. I mean,
well, that's right. Yes, they're bowing to the pressure to open up churches, and yeah. Or they're real. You know, if you think it's not safe for movie theaters to be open, then churches should not be open. Period.
I would agree with.
That's what we're saying. You know, follow the health and safety guidelines. If they're open, other people like them should be open. But some
you know what is open? What is open is office buildings are open. Right? They're definitely open. The problem is nobody's going to them. And so there's no reason to get into an elevator to go up a few stories or flights and then go to your office, which means the music that you usually hear in elevators, yeah, that's not needed either.
Yeah, I'm wondering, Muzak is what you're leading to. The company behind Muzak is entering bankruptcy. They're not going to go out of business and disappear, but they're using bankruptcy to sort of reorganize and rejigger themselves. But it's a reminder of how intertwined a lot of businesses are. When people work from home more, that means a lot of cafes and coffee shops and newsstands and an entire ecosystem in corporate neighborhoods is going to pay a price. And one of them, apparently, is Muzak. I couldn't figure out why or how. Because if you're a restaurant and you're not in business right now, aren't you still paying your annual license fee, Muzak? I'm not sure why, just because people aren't there, suddenly the money's not being paid.
Because it's just not being paid. It's a bill that gets sent, and then the restaurant owners say, yeah, we're not paying it. Same thing with building owners.
But they're going to have to pay it at some point.
Yeah, or, correct.
You know, right, or unless they go out of business, which can happen too. But I'm just not sure why that is affected. You know, it's like landlords and stuff. But yeah, it's one more thing, but they're going to have to catch up. You want to keep playing music at your restaurant, you got to play a license to ASCAP and or BMI, or if you play, you know, the service by Muzak, you got to pay them. You know, they don't care whether you got to pay for your power.
Yeah. And I realized I skipped over your story about Lemley here.
Well, I figured you would care about that one. The Lemley chain, they are looking to sell off at least one location. Now, weren't they going to sell off the whole chain like a year or two ago?
Yes, they were. And, you know, it was getting harder and harder for them. And now, as the coronavirus bared down on us, I actually went to a conference. It was a really small conference, maybe 20, 30 people. Mm-hmm. And Greg Lemley was interviewed by Andrew Wallenstein, who then 2 weeks later appeared on our program here to talk about some of his, he talked about a number of things.
Seth Sperling tooting our own horn.
Yes. But Greg Lemley was talking about whether theaters would close or not. And he said, if they do, it's going to be difficult. One of the reasons he was thinking of selling last year is that it was a family business. The industry was becoming more difficult in trying to get films, really. Just get any type of film.
You need deep pockets. You need deep pockets to survive any sort of downturn or a problem, and you can't compete with the big boys.
Yeah, and he was basically, you know, kind of at the end of his career or, you know, mid-career. He was like, you know, what should I be doing? And he got a few offers, and then they decided, you know what? Actually, we're gonna keep going.
And now he's saying, okay, I am looking to maybe sell one location or two, depending on the real estate, because we need the money. But I am not looking to resell the entire chain. He's tried to make that clear. And I'm not rescinding on that, nor is this perhaps the good time to do it. But he is looking to sell off one location because they own the land. He said, one of our advantages is we tend to own the dirt. You know, we're not renting our location, which is, I have a friend in Atlanta. He has a restaurant. He wouldn't have even opened a restaurant unless he could find a location where he could buy the property. Because being a renter, when you got a business, it's just a sucker's game when you're in a big city. It's just a nightmare. If you make money, they raise your rent. They can always push you out for some other tenant. You know, you're over a barrel, really. And so the only reason he's still in business is because he owns the land. He doesn't have to pay rent. And now he's looking to say, well, how long can I stay open while losing money? You know, how long can I wait for a down? You know, am I going to have to wait a year and a half, 2 years before we're back to normal? Because that's very possible. He's realistic. He's like, well, we're not going to have a vaccine till sometime in 2021. If we're really, really lucky, that would be a record-setting vaccine. And that means people going into the restaurant, sitting inside at all the tables, eating normally like we were used to. That may not happen for a year or more. And does he want to pay he's losing a little money every month. But he's business. He's keeping the lights on. He's keeping some people employed.
This is your friend who's losing
money every month. And he's saying, well, how much will I lose if I stay open for a year or 2 years until we turn things around? I can do it, but is that worth it for me?
So that's, you know, theater owners are saying the same thing. They're like, look, I could open, but I'm going to lose money each week playing movies to 25 people.
Right. But even if I stay closed, I'm losing money. The question is, how long do I want to wait?
I should have brought this up during our box office. Mm-hmm. So I have some box office news.
Ooh.
Now, I don't know the exact amount of money that was earned. I do know that in the United Arab Emirates, the UAE, last weekend, 2 weekends ago at this point, 9,000 people went to the movies, okay? Which does not pay for the cleaning of the theaters that was required. That was in the UAE. In Saudi Arabia, 26,000 people went to the movies that same weekend. Only 16 cinemas, 26,000 people.
So what does that work out per screen and how many a day? Is that a lot? Is that nothing?
It's a lot. It's a lot given what's going on there.
Why were they going a lot there rather than in the UAE? You're contrasting and saying very few people went to the movies. Why did so many people turn out in Saudi Arabia? Was there a new movie that they could see?
The thinking is that for them, every movie is new, right? Like they didn't have movie theaters in the 80s.
They have lots of movies that they watch on, you know, they're not sitting at home wondering what Star Wars is. They've watched Star Wars if they want to.
Right. So for them, it's, you know, a new form of entertainment going to a cinema.
Right, but that doesn't mean they want to risk their life doing it. I mean, yeah, so cinemas are so new that you're saying they're willing to risk everything to do it?
Well, also, I would say that a good 50% of the population is under the age, is like 26, 27 or younger.
Mm-hmm. Well, in Iran, they're unemployed, of course, so that could be another factor in terms of so bored wanting something to do. Where are you getting these figures from?
An exhibitor in the Middle East, let's just put it that way.
So they're saying... But we're going to say there's only 16, is this information on 16 screens or are there only 16 hardtops in Saudi Arabia?
16 hardtops, not 16 screens.
Right. That's why I corrected myself. So there's just 16 hardtops total in Saudi Arabia?
Correct.
And 26,000 people went to the movies in that 1 week?
Yes, correct.
And how many is that a day? 26 divided by 7 is like 3,000 and change, right?
I mean, it's not a lot when you think about
people of 4,000 people a day. Well, that's getting to be pretty good for 16 screens, 4,000 people into 16 screens, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you obviously want multiples of that, but given where everybody's at, not bad. Given that, like in Texas, they'll open a movie theater and 5 people show up.
Right. But not sustainable if they all start to get sick.
Correct.
So we're not ready for that here. And that's some news we have as well. Universal, they have said the sequels to Halloween, they had 2 sequels. One was scheduled for the fall of 2020. And then the next one was going to come out in 2021. Now they've been pushed back an entire year. They're saying, yeah, it's not coming out in October or September. The next sequel will come out in the fall of 2021. And the one after that will come out a year later in 2022. They pushed it way back. Ditto for the film The Forever Purge. You know the Purge movies. Well, they had one scheduled for May. Then they pushed, now that's going to come out, okay, maybe July of 2021. So forget a lost summer. forget a lost fall. You're going to have to start planning for a lost year. I really think that's true. One analyst said, you made headlines because, you know, a Tenet, I don't think it's coming out in August. I hate to tell you this, but Mulan and Tenet, they're not coming out in August.
The theaters aren't going to be open.
Right, well, exactly. And until you know your movie theater is going to be open for 12 weeks in a row, I'm not releasing a $200 million movie because I know I'm going to have to play for weeks and weeks and weeks to come close to making what I would have made in a normal situation. So unless I'm very confident you're going to be open for an entire quarter where my movie can play, and that's not even worrying about other movies opening up and taking screens away from me. I would want to know, okay, I can play out and have those weeks and weeks we're going to need with reduced capacity, and I'm going to need weeks to do that. So until I'm confident, we're going to go 3 months, I would say, without interruption. Why would I risk opening a $200 million movie?
Well, and then you look at Hong Kong, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, here's...
Their movie theaters are shut back down. They've had the
same with Disneyland.
Wave. Yeah, Hong Kong same Disneyland is shut down. Shanghai Disneyland is still open. Hong Kong Disneyland shut down. Hong Kong cinemas shut down. They're facing their third wave of coronavirus, as they tag it. Third wave is just obviously layman speaking. We're just saying, oh, testing, illness is going up. We're not talking about the classic second wave that might come in the fall with flu season, where it's going to be a really bad new, strain. This is just them dealing with the virus that we have right now. You know, it's never subsided really. So yeah,
what I think is interesting is they're basically like, the way we're finding out about it is not, oh, there's been 2,000 cases in Hong Kong. No, we're finding out. This is how we find out. They're closing Disneyland in Hong Kong. That must mean something.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how good numbers we have coming from Hong Kong, but we know enough to say that they're shutting down the theme parks and the movie theaters. But there is some people are coming together at film festivals. We've known this was sort of happening. I think Cannes wanted to be a part of it, but it didn't work out. But now Venice...
I think Cannes has kind of maybe bullied some people over their history. And now Venice was like, I don't know, you never called us before. Yeah, so why would you call us now?
Never mind. So yeah. Venice, Telluride, Toronto, and New York, they've all faced reality and said, we don't even know what we're going to do. So why are we going to be competing with each other for movies? They're just saying, let's all collaborate together on what we present and how. So they're just facing the reality that whatever happens this fall, maybe they'll be able to show some movies online. But, what does it mean to fight for Telluride to get a movie instead of Venice when maybe no one can even go there to watch something in the first place? So they're working together. We don't know how, but I imagine they'll do something like have a combined fest or just say, we're going to all celebrate these movies. There aren't going to be as many available because people can't even finish their movies. And we're going to make the best of a bad situation. Certainly the American film market, they are going online this year, just like Cannes did. Hopefully you imagine they will take some notes from Cannes and learn from their...
I think they're run by the same people.
Oh, really? Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
And as we've known, LA film, TV, and commercial production has been getting back online. CBS's The Bold and the Beautiful, that was the first TV thing back in production, I believe. It's been back in production for 2 weeks now. And now they've said, you know what? We're going to start airing new episodes on July 20th. So soap operas, I need my story, as some people would say. That's going to come back starting July 20th, at least for one of the shows. And people are looking to the future. You know what? We're going to get through this somehow. As gloomy as I may be saying, come on, we're not going to have a big fall movie season, not with big blockbusters, because the theaters aren't going to be able to stay open consistently. As gloomy as that is, people are looking down the road. There will be movie going again. There will be movies being made again. And so Sky Studios has gotten permission in the UK to go forward with Sky Studios Elstree, a major complex that will be located near the legendary Elstree Studios. It's going to take 5 years to complete. That's what they're promising. But they're hoping to be ready actually in 3 years. They're hoping to be ready by 2022. So that's 2 or 3 years, depending on how you count it. It's already mid-July here, of course. But you know what? They're saying, hey, people are going to be making movies and TV shows. Maybe they'll have more swinging doors built into the regular spaces of Sky Studios Elstree. Maybe they'll be planning and thinking about what's the best way to build the studio in a post-pandemic world where we're going to want to do stuff that we're doing at different studios.
Lots of plexiglass.
Right. That plexiglass is never going away. It's at the grocery stores, at the, bookstores. Everywhere I go, they got plexiglass. I'm like, yeah, you know what? Good. You go to a drive-through, they've got plexiglass halfway down the window. They can reach through underneath, but there's no reason to have it all the way open. So I think that's a great sign for the future. I hate to be so negative about what's going to happen in terms of this year at the box office. Certainly, we're not going to have theater this year. We're not going to have people at live music, except, you know, you sit in your car at a drive-in. Brad Paisley just did it this weekend. That's cool, but that's not really, you know, what we're talking about. We're talking about getting back to real life. He did a concert. He live streamed it on his Facebook page. I believe he did it at a drive-in with people sitting in their cars. And
yes, he did.
If anybody paid money, it was a donation to charity. He does a food bank there in Nashville. So I'm a big fan of Brad Paisley. Cool stuff that he did. So that's great to see. It's fun if people can do anything in any way, shape, or form and get out of the house and do it safely. So that's all good news and good for Sky Studios Elstree. Make sure you got lots of ramps and plexiglass, though.
You know what's not good news?
What?
That, you know, Glee actress Naya Rivera.
Well, that's true.
Reportedly died.
Yeah, they found a body now. They've been searching for her a few days. It's very sad. She's reportedly dead at the age of 33. We don't know really what happened. It seems like a tragic accident. She played Santana on Glee. You know, everybody wants to be famous when they're young, but every once in a while you hear about somebody and they become famous at 30 or 40 or 50, or they hit that jackpot. And every once in a while they'll be like, yeah, you know what? I'm glad this didn't happen when I was 20, because that is really hard to deal with. You know, she's a secondary actor on Glee. I don't mean to be flippant or cruel when I say that. She was on a hit show. That's awesome. People knew her name, but that was overwhelming. One person has died of a drug overdose. Another one committed suicide. Now she's had a tragic accident and had a troubled life post Glee, is the nice way to put it. So obviously you feel bad for her family and her child. It's a tragic situation. You hope she could have had a better life in the future, but you know, people who want that big, quick fame and fortune on YouTube, be careful what you wish for.
You know, I guess we should say she was boating with her.
She was boating with her 4-year-old child. Yeah. They rented a boat and went out on a lake. Yeah, it's no big deal. Yeah. Right? You know.
And an Oscar winner for Ordinary People, producer Ronald Schwari. Is that how you pronounce it?
Your guess is as good as mine. I would describe him as he made movies for adults. He wanted to make films like Hollywood used to make in the old days. They weren't all good, but by God, they were sort of intelligent with good people trying to tell good, interesting stories. He backed Ordinary People. That was the first film he made on his own, obviously winning the Oscar for Best Picture, beating out Raging Bull, right? No, not Raging Bull. That was the other one. Was it Raging Bull? No. Yes.
Raging Bull. Yeah, Ordinary Dances, People. Yes.
Yeah, it was Dances with Wolves that blocked Goodfellas. That's right.
Yes.
So Ordinary People, he did Scent of a Woman, which won, I believe, an Oscar for Al Pacino. He did Absence of Malice, a good solid courtroom drama with Paul Newman. He did A Soldier Story based on, I think, the Pulitzer Prize winning play. Those are all, you can see what kind of taste he had. You know, classic sort of Hollywood, I don't want middle brow, I don't say that in a dismissive way. It's a sort of intelligent, solid, fair about things that mattered.
Do you know why Al Pacino won an Oscar for Scent of a Woman?
No, I don't.
Now, if this was a morning zoo show, I would actually have the clip of Al Pacino saying, I'm going to take a flamethrower to this place.
Oh, Scarface, you mean?
No. In the movie, he says one of his lines.
Oh, okay. I thought it was hoorah.
Yeah.
Hoorah!
Yeah.
Ronald Schwari also did some solid TV work. He did Tour of Duty, which was a pretty good war show. He did Now and Again, which was Glenn Gordon Caron's follow-up to Moonlighting. I found it sort of intriguingly interesting and made Eric Close a star, or as much of a star as he is. And his real jackpot there, Medium with Patricia Arquette. That's something you can take to the bank, believe me. But here's why we mentioned him. He wrote a fan letter at the age of 14 to director Cecil B. DeMille, and asked for, like, can you send me some photos from the Ten Commandments? It's such a great movie, and you're such a great producer and director. I'm like, yeah, 14. Like, and you know what? They struck up a pen pal friendship. Cecil B. DeMille said, come visit me sometime. He got on a bus and went to visit Cecil B. DeMille. When he got there, Cecil B. DeMille was in the hospital ailing, so he couldn't see him. And he went back home and wrote a letter saying, I came to see you. And they remained lifelong friends by pen until Cecil B. DeMille died a few years later. But what a nutty thing. And then, you know, he went on. He was John Wayne. Somehow they were graduates together at the same college, and John Wayne found out about him and paid for him to take his DGA trainee test. You know, it's what you have to take in order to become an assistant DGA trainee or something. He failed, but John Wayne somehow got him work anyway. He said, here, he got him work as Dustin Hoffman's stand-in on The Graduate and an extra on Planet of the Apes. Then he passed his trainee test on the second try, and he did some work on the pilot to the TV show MASH. He was not a credited director, but he worked on the pilot to MASH, and he made a number of films with Sidney Pollack. So I just love that. As a kid, he writes Cecil B. DeMille, his fellow college alum, though they didn't go at the same time, not at all. But John Wayne found out about him, helped to pay for his DGA test, and then helped get him work. He's on The Graduate. He's on MASH. Sidney Bollier. It's kind of cool. It's just, that's a classic Hollywood story. You know, you write a fan letter, they reach back and you make a friendship and it gives you a contact and you have a whole career out of it. So I just love that stuff.
Well, when he showed up on the set of Planet of the Apes and, you know, it was time to film and Charlton Heston tapped him on the shoulder to say, okay, you know, I'm here now. He turned to him and said, get your paws off me, you filthy animal.
This is why I'm not singing. That's why if I don't get to sing, you don't get to do stand-up.
Oh, okay.
and more sad news, of course, all these people have died, so it's inherently sad. But actor Kelly Preston died of breast cancer at the age of 57. She's, of course, Hollywood royalty as the wife of John Travolta and an actress in her own right. She's appeared in Jerry Maguire, For the Love of the Game, Space Camp, Battlefield Earth, of course. And she was one of the first Hollywood celebs open about being a Scientologist. And the most amazing thing to me is that they somehow kept the fact that she was fighting breast cancer secret for 2 years. That is not easy to do.
No, I mean, not in this day and age.
I mean, maybe it seemed to be a surprise in the trades when they reported on it. Maybe it was in the tabloids. They probably say every woman's got breast cancer at some point or another, but that's kind of amazing. So full credit to them for maintaining their privacy. I'm glad they were able to do that. And another sad person who has died is director Kevin Rafferty. He did The Atomic Cafe, which is a classic archival clip job of a movie where they brought old sort of educational films and things and put them all together in The Atomic Cafe, very famously in the trailer and in the clips shown on Siskel and Ebert. They showed the scene where they tell kids, oh, if there's an atomic bomb, duck and cover. Duck and get under your school desk. You'll be okay. He did that film and he died at the age of 73. He didn't make a lot of movies. He had his name on just about a half a dozen films as co-director, but they included Harvard Beats Yale, 29-29, well worth seeing, and movies I haven't seen like Blood in the Face and The Last Cigarette. Michael Moore reached out to him, and he mentored Michael Moore, to say the least. Michael Moore called him up asking for pointers, like, I'm nobody. I'm in Michigan, Flint, Michigan. Just had a few calls. Rafferty, like, apparently practically got in a car and drove out there. He showed up with cameras, stock footage that they could use to film, and a team of people serving as a cameraman on Roger and Me. Now that is mentoring. I mean, that's pretty cool. He died at the age of 73, didn't make a lot of movies, but he made them all stick.
Well, you know, the one thing that we do is we make a lot of podcasts.
We do indeed. 502, heavens to Betsy.
Yes, but we'll be, you know, we're trying to end this one before, you know, the 1 hour mark.
Say goodbye, tell a joke and say goodbye.
I told my joke. It was by the way, as we've been recording this, the LA Unified School District has said that they will not be going back to school in the fall.
Well, that's, you know, that's very hard. I mean, obviously we want kids to go back to school. We want to do it in a way that's safe. The first thing you have to do, though, no matter how you go back, and people point to the Scandinavian countries and say, well, they did it and they're not having trouble. So yeah, but they also flattened the curve and had, you know, our retransmission rate below one. That's before most of them sent kids back to school. And two, they've done things like have pods of children. Like you have one teacher assigned to 12 kids. And those are who you stay with. And you stay with them all day long. You're not going to different classes. You're not going to gym with different people. You're staying completely separate from everybody all day long. Well, like you go, okay. And it's really important for kids not to lose schooling, and it's not working at home as well as you would like. And like a third of kids don't have access to Wi-Fi or decent high-speed internet. So yeah, you want to get kids back to school. But if you're looking at those countries, the way they did it is very expensive and very difficult. You got a cast of 30 kids. You're going to need three teachers instead of one and three different spaces because they're separating 6 feet apart and wearing masks as well. So it can work. You can put kids outside while the weather's good. You can have, but it's going to be very expensive. And it's going to be very complicated and very scary until you make sure you flatten the curve first. So we all want
to walk around with a hula hoop around me and nobody can come close to me.
That's a good idea. Now that's a good show.
Well, in that case, let me tell you how you can subscribe to us in iTunes, the Google Play Store, Microsoft Marketplace, Stitcher, anywhere they give podcasts away for free. You can rate and review the show on those podcast aggregators. It does help us out when you do that. So please do. Links to all of the stories we've discussed on today's episode can be found on our website, showbizsandbox.com. It's where you'll find those ways to subscribe to us, ways to contact us, dirt@showbizsandbox.com. That's dirt@showbizsandbox.com. You can also call and leave us a voicemail. The number to call is 888-567-SAND. That's 888-567-7263. We're on Twitter, where our handle is @showbizsandbox. We're on Facebook, where you can like us, facebook.com/showbizsandbox. The music that you hear at the beginning and end of each show is by the popular indie rock group MGMT. We have a website, it's showbizsandbox.com. MGMT has a website, it's whoismgmt.com. Go there and find out. Michael Giltz has a website, and every week it's something new and exciting. What is it this week, Michael?
This week it's ivegotnothing.com.
You know what? I'm not quite sure you can find all of Michael's coverage of the entertainment industry.
There. Enough for me to draw a website from. I'm like, yeah. There just wasn't enough going on. Though I am watching. Yeah, anyway.
Anyway, you know what? Why not head on over to michaelgiltz.com, where all of his work is aggregated. Nice. Some of my work can be found on celluloidjunkie.com. Until next week, play nice.